Jaya Radha Madhava Gunda Bihari. Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashutara Shuddha Shri Srimad Sivangris Hasti Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Rajagrantha Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Samveda Bhakta Vrindagi Nitai Gaur Pranandi. All glories to this Munavaris, all glories to this Munavaris, all glories to Shishudran Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Akyatmirandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadhati Swapadantikam Manjakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Revacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 5 Chapter 1, text number 32 through 35. I'm going to read the translations from verses 32 to 34, and they have short purports. This is text number 32, translation. The names of the islands are Jambu. Yesterday we heard about how Priyavata's chariot divided the... I'll just read the previous verse. When Priyavrata drove his chariot behind the sun, the rims of his chariot wheels created impressions that later became seven oceans, dividing the planetary system known as Bhumandala into seven islands. The names of the islands are Jambu, Plaksha, Shalmali, Kusha, Kroncha, Shaka, and Pushkara. Each island is twice as large as the one preceding it, and each is surrounded by a liquid substance beyond which is the next island. Purport, the ocean in each planetary system has a different type of liquid. How they are situated is explained in the next verse, text 33. Translation, the seven oceans respectively contain salt water, sugarcane juice, liquor, clarified butter, milk, emulsified yogurt, and sweet drinking water. All the islands are completely surrounded by these oceans, and each ocean is equal in breadth to the island it surrounds. Maharaj Priyavrata, the husband of Queen Barhishmati, gave sovereignty over these islands to his respective sons, namely Agnidra, Itmajihwa, Jagnabahu, Hiranyarita, Gritaprishta, Medhatiti, and Vitihotra. Thus they all became kings by the order of their father, Purport. It is to be understood that all the dwipas or islands are surrounded by different types of oceans, and it is said herein that the breadth of each ocean is the same as that of the island it surrounds. The length of the oceans, however, cannot equal the length of the islands. According to Vidaragava Acharya, the breadth of the first island is 100,000 yojanas. One yojana equals 8 miles, and therefore the breadth of the first island is calculated to be 800,000 miles. The water surrounding it must have the same breadth, but its length must be different. Text 34. So anyway, what we're hearing about are the extraordinary activities of Priyavrata. And then a point's going to be made coming to conclude. In other words, it sounds like mythology. So when a modern person shall read these things, they'll think, oh, this is just one of their mythological tales to explain away something that science can do in a more proper way. That's what they're going to say. So it's coming to a point that Shukadeva Goswami is going to try to make here. The next verse says, King Priyavrata then gave his daughter Urdhrasweti in marriage to Shukracharya, who begot in her a daughter named Devayani. And then text 35. Naivam vida purushakara rurukramasya. Pumsam tantangri rachasa jita shat gunarnam. Chitram vidhura vigata sakrit adadita. Yana madhe yamaduna sajahati bandham. Naivam vidha purushakara rurukramasya. Pumsa tadangri rajasa jitasat gunanam. Chitram vidhura vigata sakridadadita. Yana madhe yamaduna sajahati bandham. Naivam vidha purushata rurukramasya. Santangri rajasaj tashad gunanam. Chitram vidhur vigata sakradadita. Yana madheya maduna sajahati pandam. Mothers. Naivam vidha purushakara rurukramasya. Pumsam tadhangri rajasa jitrashat gunanam. Chitram vidhura vigata sakridadadita. Yana madheya madhuna sajahati bandham. Like that, Purushakara, personal influence, Urukramasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Pumsam, of the devotees, Tat Angri, of his lotus feet, Rajasa, by the dust, Jitashat Gunanam, who have conquered the influence of the six kinds of material whips. Chitram, wonderful. Vidhura Vigata, the fifth great person, or the untouchable. Sakrit, only once. Adadita, if he utters, yet whose? Namadheyam, holy name, Aduna, immediately, so he, Jahati, gives up, Bandham, material bondage. Translation for Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, my dear King, a devotee who has taken shelter of the dust from the lotus feet of the Lord can transcend the influence of the six material whips, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death, and he can conquer the mind and five senses. However, this is not very wonderful for a pure devotee of the Lord, because even a person beyond the jurisdiction of the four castes, in other words, an untouchable, is immediately relieved of bondage to material existence if he utters the holy name of the Lord even once. Purport, Sukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit about the activities of King Priyavrata, and since the king might have had doubts about these wonderful, uncommon activities, Sukadeva Goswami reassured him. My dear king, he said, don't be doubtful about the wonderful activities of Priyavrata. For a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is possible because the Lord is also known as Urukrama. Urukrama is a name for Lord Vamandev, who performed the wonderful act of occupying the three worlds with three footsteps. Lord Vamanadev requested three paces of land from Maharaj Bali, and when Maharaj Bali agreed to grant them, the Lord immediately covered the entire world with two footsteps, and for his third step, he placed his foot upon Bali Maharaj's head. Shri Jayadeva Goswami says, Chalaya Sivi Kramane Balamabhuta Bhamana Paranaka Nira Janita Janapavana Keshavadrita Vamanarupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare Jaya Jagadisha Hare Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Quote, all glories to Lord Keshava, who assumed the form of a dwarf, O Lord of the universe, who takes away everything inauspicious for the devotees. O wonderful Vamandev, you tricked the great demon Bali Maharaj by your steps. The water that touched the nails of your lotus feet, when you pierced through the covering of the universe, purifies all living entities in the form of the river Ganges. That's the end of the quote. Since the Supreme Lord is all-powerful, he can do things that seem wonderful for a common man. Similarly, a devotee who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord can also do wonderful things, unimaginable to a common man, by the grace of the dust of those lotus feet. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore teaches us to take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Ayinanda tanujan kinkaram patitam mam vishme bhavan budau kripaya tvapada pankaja sita dhuli sadrisham vinchintaya. Quote, O son of Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant, yet somehow or other, I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms of your lotus feet. End quote. Lord Chaitanya teaches us to come in touch with the dust of the Lord's lotus feet, for then there will undoubtedly be all success. That's one thing. Here's another. Because of the material body, every living entity and material existence is always disturbed by Shat Guna, six whips. Hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, invalidity, and death. Furthermore, another Shat Guna are the mind and five sense organs. Not to speak of a sanctified devotee, even a chandala, an outcast who is untouchable, is immediately free from material bondage if he utters the holy name of the Lord even once. Sometimes caste brahmanas argue that unless one changes his body, he cannot be accepted as a brahmana, for since the present body is obtained as a result of past actions, one who has in the past acted as a brahmana takes birth in a brahmin family. Therefore, they contend, without such a brahminical body, one cannot be accepted as a brahmana. Herein, it is said, however, that even Vidhura Vigata, a chandala, a fifth-class untouchable, is freed if he utters the holy name even once. Being free means that he immediately changes his body. Sanatana Goswami confirms this. Yata kanchanatam yati kamsyam rasa vidhanatah tata diksha vidhanena dijatvam jayate nirnam. When a person, even though a chandala, is initiated by a pure devotee into chanting the holy name of the Lord, his body changes as he follows the instructions of the spiritual master. Although one cannot see how his body has changed, we must accept on the grounds of the authoritative statements of the Shastras that he changes his body. This is to be understood without arguments. This verse clearly says, Sa jahati bhantam. He gives up his material bondage. The body is a symbolic representation of material bondage according to one's karma. Although sometimes we cannot see the gross body changing, chanting the holy name of the Supreme Lord immediately changes the subtle body, and because the subtle body changes, the living entity is immediately free from material bondage. After all, changes of the gross body are conducted by the subtle body. After the destruction of the gross body, the subtle body takes the living entity from its present gross body to another. In the subtle body, the mind is predominant, and therefore, if one's mind is always absorbed in remembering the activities or the lotus feet of the Lord, he is to be understood to have already changed his present body and become purified. Therefore, it is irrefutable that a chandala or any fallen or low-born person can become a brahmana simply by the method of bona fide initiation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, so the messages. The first message is Shukadeva Goswami has just described some very amazing and unbelievable activities in Maharaj Priyavrata. Maharaj Priyavrata was not very satisfied with the movements of the sun, so he boarded a very special chariot in order to provide sunlight in parts of the world where the sun was not shining in certain times of the year. And so he mounted his chariot and kind of like was chasing, not chasing after the sun as per se, but his chariot was as effulgent as the sun. And in some cases, it was mentioned previously, it was even more pleasing than the sun in certain times of the year. So that's kind of extraordinary, a little bit hard to believe. And then with his chariot, he created seven islands in the Bhumandal. So there was some discussion there. That's hard, technical. I'll not be able to talk about that in detail. But he created seven islands with his chariot. The impressions left by his chariot wheel became seven islands. So that sounds a little extraordinary too. And each of those islands was surrounded by various types of oceans. The first one was mentioned was a salt water ocean. Then there was a liquor water ocean. I think the people of Kaliyuga would have really appreciated that. And there was a sugarcane ocean. And there was so many different types of oceans were mentioned. So that's kind of far. A salt water ocean, we can imagine. A liquor water ocean, many may want to imagine, but you know, that's unbelievable. And sugarcane ocean. And so like this, very unbelievable things that Shukadeva Goswami is describing about Priyavrata. So after describing these very unbelievable things, what the modern empiric pedant would say is mythology, or you know, just a story to tell, explain away things that they don't know actually is beyond their comprehension. Luckily, we have modern science to give a proper understanding of things. This is just for primitive people who weren't very thoughtful and so on. So those types of doubts naturally come up in the modern mind. Here, Prabhupada points out that Parshat Maharaj may be wondering, come on. Okay, if it's the Supreme Lord, they accept that this is the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord can do very amazing things. But this is just a jiva. This is just and we won't say an ordinary jiva, but he's just a jiva doing a very extraordinary activity, beyond belief activity. So if you don't accept this person as God, you accept him as jiva, and he's doing something that's like on the level of what God can do. So that seems a little bit unbelievable. So they may say that we're fanatical. The doubt may come in the mind. How are we to accept this? How are we to believe this? So then, in answer to that, Shukadeva Goswami gives this verse in answer to that. That the Supreme Lord is himself Urukramasya. He is a performer of very wonderful activities. The word Uru means very great, very wonderful. And Kramaya means steps. He's a performer of very wonderful activities, beyond belief activities. That is not too hard to digest for any person who's a little bit theistic, that God can do anything. That's a general platform position of God. He can do anything, right? So the Supreme Lord is Uru Kramasya. Prabhupada briefly tells about Lord Vamanadeva. The Lord came as a dwarf because he can do that. He's bigger than the biggest and he can be smaller than the smallest. Of course, a dwarf is still big enough, not so small. And he approached Bali Maharaj, the king of demons, and said, I only want 3 steps of land. I'm not going to the whole story. You know the story. I only want 3 steps of land. Bali Maharaj said, look how tiny your legs are. You have very tiny legs. What will your 3 steps take? 1, 2, 3, just a little space is there. You should be intelligent. You can read the section in chapter 19. He said, you be intelligent. I'll give you one whole island. He said, Bali Maharaj had conquered the whole universe at the time. So I'll give you one whole island. So then Vamanadeva gave some very nice philosophy that if I cannot be satisfied with 3 steps of land, then certainly I will not be satisfied with a whole island. He speaks very nice philosophy about the necessity of becoming satisfied, the necessity of becoming sense control so that you can become satisfied like that. And so I will only take 3 steps on land. And Bali Maharaj said, okay, you're just a foolish boy, what to do? Okay, take your 3 steps on land. And in 2 steps, he covered the whole universe. And Vamanadeva, so where is my 3rd step going to go? And Bali Maharaj offered his own head. And Vamanadeva said, I already took that in the first 2 steps. Well, Bali Maharaj was thinking that the possessor of the property is greater than the property, and therefore he can offer his own head. But Vamanadeva's opinion is, I already took that in the first 2 steps. So then he punished him. Anyway, the pastime goes on. It's very nice. So here's a... And when the Lord extended his 1st leg, it covered the whole lower planetary systems. And when he extended his 2nd leg, it covered the upper planetary systems. And then his toe poked a hole in the universe. Now that's extraordinary. You can poke a hole in the universe. all very far out things, right? His toe poked a hole in the universe, and from that hole came the waters of the causal ocean, and that's the Ganges water. So here's a very extraordinary activity. Hardly anyone would probably accept it with their empiric training that's going on today. But for those who are a little theistic, they'll say, okay, it's God, he can do anything, they can accept that. But Shukadeva Goswami's point is here, just as the Lord is Uru Kramasya, then those who take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, they also take on that quality of Uru Kramasya. Pumsa Tadangri Rajasa, one who takes the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord, one who becomes fully dedicated to the Supreme Lord. Generally, the idea of taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord is to become fully dedicated to his service. Because the Lord's toes are non-different from his voice, are non-different from his various other organs. Angani yashasa kalendri avriti manti, pashanti panti kalayanti chinam jaganti. So taking shelter of the Lord's feet is the same as taking shelter of the Lord's voice in the form of Bhagavad Gita and other such relevant instructions. So to take shelter of the Lord's feet means to become fully dedicated to carrying out his order. Then one who takes such shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, then they also become similarly empowered to do extraordinary activities that are beyond belief. That's the simple message. Just like the simple example Prabhupada gives is that when one boards an airplane is moving at 500 miles per hour. And one who boards an airplane, he is also moving at 500 miles per hour. He himself cannot actually move 500 miles per hour. He would die immediately. But when he gets on the airplane, he takes on the quality of the airplane, per se. So he's also moving at the same speed. I think in India you see this more on the streets, where there's like a truck and there's like someone riding a bike and he grabs hold into the truck and then he like cruises. I think that looks... this is a tangential point. That seems very dangerous because the way the driving goes on in India is like inconceivable. Now, this is another Uru Kramasya. How things are going on in India. Anyway, so that we've seen that thing in India. They grab onto the truck. So they can move at the same speed as the truck. So the idea is that by connecting to a higher power, you take on the quality of that higher power and can also be empowered to do extraordinary activities. So one who takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, that means become fully dedicated to his service, become fully dedicated to carrying out his order. Then such a devotee, even though a tiny jiva, he becomes Uru Kramasya. He can do extraordinary activities. The particular quality that's pointed out is jitas shagunanam. He can conquer over shagunanam. Shagunanam means the six material whips: hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, invalidity, and death, as mentioned here. He can conquer over these six whips, which is not a very easy thing to do. I don't know if you ever experienced a very lamentable situation, how difficult it is to overcome the influence of lamentation. Hunger and thirst, Parikshit Maharaj was not able to overcome the influence of hunger and thirst, you know, per the Leela. And at the end, when the 10th canto is about to begin, Sukadeva Goswami says, maybe you're feeling thirsty. So many days you've been hearing Srimad Bhagavatam straight, 5-6 days, maybe. At that time, maybe close to 6 days, without sleeping. You know, generally when a conditioned soul can't sleep, he becomes evil. He becomes very agitated. If he cannot get something to drink, something to eat, he becomes very disturbed. So Sukadeva Goswami, Prabhupada paraphrases like this in the purport in the 10th canto. You may be a little disturbed that you're not able to, you need to take some water, take a little rest, you know. And to that, Parikshit Maharaj responds, it is due to being hungry and thirsty that I'm in this situation in the first place. Right? Because of little hunger and thirst, I got cursed to die in 7 days. So I've given up hunger and thirst, and now I'm drinking the nectar of Harikata. And I am surviving on that. You go and continue narrating the 10th canto, please. Like that. So by taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, that's the message, one can overcome the influence of hunger and thirst. Or another shagunanam is the mind and senses. Very difficult to overcome the influence of the mind and senses, particularly the mind. Very difficult. Whatever is happening to the mind, one thinks that it's happening to me. This is called the false designation. Just like for those of us who are into sports, I often give this example. You know, when you're watching your favorite sports star, you assume the identity of that sports star. And whatever's happening to him, you think is happening to you. Right? When he gets to, I'm thinking of tennis because I was into tennis. You know, he gets a forehand winner. You're like, yes! You know, you're all into the TV. And from a third-party onlooker, he becomes a little concerned, you know. Yeah. And then he misses the backhand or something like that. And then a player goes like this, and then you also go like this. And then, this is a complete illusion. The person is a complete illusion. But he accepts that designation. And by accepting that designation, he's overcome by that identity. He's experiencing so many. This is a verse from the Bhagavatam, Samsara Tapa Avapanam. That designation becomes the breeding ground for all sorts of miseries experienced in the material world. So it is not easy to overcome the influence of the mind because we have accepted the mind as ourself. Right, so when the mind is jubilant, I'm ready, you know, we're like fired up for the morning program, and then when the mind's not jubilant, and when the mind is jubilant, we're doing backflips, and when the mind's not jubilant, we're ready to just crawl into a hole. Don't talk to me, don't look at me, don't bring me any prasadam, don't associate with me. And the mind, dragging us all over the universe. So to overcome the influence of the mind is extremely challenging. In fact, it's on account of the mind that the living entity remains in the material world. Simply due to the mind. Manashashtanindriyani pakutistani karshati. Krishna says that this soul, who is my part and parcel, is struggling in this world, grappling hard for happiness, due to the mind and the six senses, which includes the mind. And then Krishna goes on to further describe how it's the mind that's carrying the soul from one body to another. So it's very, very difficult to conquer the influence of the mind, but simply by taking shelter of the dust of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, that means becoming fully dedicated to His service, fully dedicated to His orders, as He gives in Bhagavad Gita, or through the bona fide spiritual master, then one is able to do something extraordinary, like overcome the influence of the mind, which has kept us in this material world since time immemorial. Or one can do other extraordinary activities even while in this body, like follow the four regulative principles. We generally don't think that's a very extraordinary activity, but in fact, it is the age of Kali. Kala, Kalera, Balena, Indriya, Vairi, Varga, Sri Bhakti, Marga, Ihakanta, Kakoti, Ruda, Prabodhananda, Saraswati, Praise. It is the age of Kali, and the senses have become very powerful enemies. And we are also bereft of knowledge. And even those who have knowledge are not able to overcome the influence of the senses. So strong. So to even follow the four regulative principles takes empowerment. You know, it's not that I'm going to follow the four regulative principles by myself. That's impossible. No one can follow the four regulative principles by themselves. You need empowerment to do. It doesn't seem so extraordinary, right? But it actually requires empowerment to follow it in a substantial way where the mind can be freed. For example, I'm giving simpler examples. This is an extraordinary example, creating an ocean. That's an extraordinary example. Here's a simpler example, following the four regulative principles. Very difficult to do. Here's another example, studying the scriptures or hearing Bhagavatam class. It requires empowerment to do so. Otherwise, most of us are spacing out during the discussion. If the speaker is not entertaining, I'm checked out, right? Isn't it? He should be a little entertaining. Otherwise, you know, suppose the speaker, so today we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It is very important that you hear. Immediately, everyone will go into their cocoons. Immediately go into a cocoon, not focus. To get the mind to focus on the message while the message is being conducted. Sometimes you see devotees bring their MP3 players. They put the MP3 player on the table and they themselves leave. Many times you see Sunday feasts is going on. So they leave the MP3 player, they themselves go away. Of course, they maybe they have to take care of kids or something. They're extraordinary circumstances. But the point is that to hear the message while the message is going on, you need empowerment to do that. You need empowerment. To chant japa and actually hear even 2-3 beads. You know, not to speak of the whole round, just 2-3 beads, if you hear it, you know, you should reply, wow, 2-3 beads, I heard the whole Maha Mantra. Just chant japa to not be distracted, to not be inattentive, to not fall asleep. It requires empowerment. These are simpler examples. They're extraordinary examples also. Like Srila Prabhupada was asked one time, at the time when Prabhupada was coming, there were also other yogis coming and they were claiming themselves to be God and they were able to do very magical tricks and so on. So they inquired from Srila Prabhupada, you know, what's your magic power, you know, naturally. Seeing is believing, right? So what's your magic power? And Prabhupada pointed to all his disciples, you know, all hippies and so on. Prabhupada, this is my power. I've turned all these hippies into happies. This is my power. And one may say, well, but that's not levitating. Yeah, but actually the reality is to transform even one individual's heart is extremely difficult. The yogi may be able to levitate, but he can't get out of the material world on the fact of an untransformed disposition towards Krishna. So therefore, to be able to change someone's disposition towards the Lord requires extraordinary empowerment. Krishna Shakti, Vina Nahe Tara Pavartan, Kali Kalera Dharma, Krishna Nama Sankirtan. No one will be able to influence someone in Krishna consciousness unless they are themselves empowered by Krishna Shakti. That is the statement of this verse I just quoted. So that requires empowerment. So to transform someone's heart, to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. There's so many examples. I was going to start with the examples. The idea is that if we shall not take shelter, then don't think you'll be able to do anything. You will not be able to hear the discussion. You will not be able to chant japa. You will not be able to overcome your anartas. No one can do anything. No one can be Krishna consciousness without actually taking shelter, becoming fully dedicated to following the order of the Lord. And to the degree that we do that, to the degree we become empowered to do the most amazing types of services. You saw, of course, in Prabhupada Leela is a very vivid example of that. The disciples surrendering to Srila Prabhupada's will and, you know, manifesting this Krishna consciousness movement. So these, yes, the activities of Priyavrata are very extraordinary, but the Lord is Urukramasya, and he who takes shelter of Urukramasya, he also gets that quality. He can do extraordinary activities. And then in the second line, he says, but this is not very impressive for a pure devotee. Chitram vidura vikata sakri adidita. Because a devotee knows that even in chanting the name of Krishna, jnanamadheyam, even in chanting the name of Krishna, one immediately, aduna sajahati badam, means one immediately becomes free from his material body. That's the meaning, according to Srila Prabhupada's purport. Just by chanting one name of Krishna, sakrit adadita jnanamadheyam, one name of Krishna one shall chant, even if he is vidura vigata, fifth class person. And that means chandala, fifth class person and beyond. You know, I think we would be flattering ourselves if we even thought ourselves fifth-class persons in Kali Yuga. You know, the type of degradation that's going on in Kali Yuga is quite extraordinary. 10th class, 20th class, 50th class, you know, down, down, down. It's bad. But even if you're in such a situation, by one chanting the holy name of Krishna, aduna sa jahati badam, one becomes freed from his material body. That is the message. So Srila Prabhupada points out that there are those persons who want a monopoly on spiritual knowledge, usually the caste brahmanas. Spirituality is only their domain. They want a monopoly over spirituality. So they make the point that unless you have a brahmana's body, then you're not able to actually practice spiritual life in a substantial way. It is just more or less your imagination. So you have to get a brahmana's body. You can perform activities like a brahmana, and in your next life you can get a brahmana's body, and then you're qualified to do the activities of a brahmana and so on. This is their argument. But according to this statement of the Shastras and many other statements Prabhupada points out in the purport, simply by chanting Harinam once, one immediately changes his body. So a few points Prabhupada makes here. Number one is that we may not be able to see that, to appreciate that, but we should accept it on the strength of the Shastras. That's the first point Prabhupada makes. Just like when Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India, he was at the home of one Brahmana who was very much lamenting how Ravana was able to kidnap Sita. And he was so distraught. And Mahaprabhu began to preach to him that is not possible. No, Ravana did not take Sita. It was a shadow Sita. Later on, Mahaprabhu traveled a little bit further and came to one place. I don't know if it was Kurmastan. It was one place Mahaprabhu came to. And he was reading one Purana. I think it was the Kurma Purana, where it was mentioned how the Sita that was kidnapped was not the real Sita, but a shadow Sita. So Mahaprabhu was ecstatic. He took the page out of the book and came back to this Brahmana's house and showed it to the Brahmana and said, "See, I told you." And then he makes this point, aprakritavastu nahe prakritirgochara. At this point, he makes a statement that aprakritavastu, spiritual substance, is always beyond the jurisdiction of material conception. It is the plane of adokshaja, which means beyond the blunt material senses. Atashi Krishna Namandi Namavegraham Njiyai. It is beyond the ability of the senses to appreciate. Apakritavasunahe Pakritirgochar. One who is inflicted with material conceptions cannot appreciate apakritavastu, spiritual substance. And so, well, how am I to accept your statements then, Mahaprabhu? So then in the next statement, Mahaprabhu says you should have faith in what I'm saying. So faith is the only bridge to spiritual reality when you're a conditioned soul. When you're a conditioned soul, not due to strong identification with the material body and mind, and therefore not being able to appreciate spiritual substance even when it appears before you. Naham prakasha sarvasha yogamaya samavita mudoyam namijananti lokayam jamavayam. Mudoyam, if we're foolish, what does it mean to be foolish? Identifying with body and mind, it's called foolishness. Anyone here foolish? No answer, that is a rhetorical question. Mudoyam namijananti, if we are foolish, then naham prakasha sarvasha yogamaya samavita, you cannot appreciate Krishna even when he appears before you. Prabhupada's purport is that so many people saw Krishna. Some people say, show me God. So many people saw Krishna. Duryodhana also saw Krishna. Krishna even showed him a special feature of himself in the form of a small universal form, as opposed to a big universal form, a smaller one. And to that, Duryodhana said, arrest him. What is it? God is showing universal form and you're saying arrest him? So seeing and not seeing, pashanapinam pashati. So, because is the real spiritual, no one can understand how spiritual is moving in this world, even when it manifests, you know, clearly. So then, the only bridge to begin to appreciate spirituality is trust. Mahaprabhu tells us to this moment, Vishwasa, you have to trust what I am saying. This would be, and give up your darshana, your materialistic philosophy, and have faith in what I am saying, and that way, proceed towards the actual spiritual platform. So this is the first point Prabhupada makes, is that the body actually does change just by chanting Harinam. But the material mind and senses will not be able to appreciate that. So it doesn't look like anything is happening, right? It doesn't look like anything is happening. But we should accept it on the strength of the Shastra. That means that the implicit statement is that there must be faith in what the Shastra is saying. Otherwise, there's no hope of beginning to perceive anything spiritual. Unless you're already sufficiently advanced, then the only hope to begin to appreciate the spiritual is faith in the Shastra. So then Prabhupada's making that point. The Shastra says this thing, so on that strength we should accept that the body has changed, even though we cannot perceive it. Then Prabhupada makes another point, that when it says change of body, it refers to the change of the subtle body. Because the subtle body is actually the basis for the gross material body. Even Krishna says this thing in the Bhagavad Gita, that the living entity is changing his different conceptions of life, changing his body. What, how's the phrase go? 15:8. I always quote it, but now I'm not, the English is leaving me. No one knows Bhagavad Gita? What is this? Huh? All our scholar brahmacharis? Yeah, from the living entity is changing his body, he's changing his conceptions from one body to another in the same way that the air carries the aroma, carrying his different conceptions of life. The living entity is carrying his different conceptions of life from one body to another in the same way that the air is carrying the aroma, right? So then the living entity gets a certain type of eye, a certain type of ear, a certain type of nose. Huh? Yeah, I wasn't looking for the Sanskrit, I was looking for the English. So he gets a certain type of eye, a certain type of nose, a certain type of ear. It's due to his conception, right? So that means if you change your conception, you actually change your gross body, right? If the subtle body changes, if the conception of the mind changes, the subtle body actually changes. This can actually be seen practically. Many of us were meat eaters before, for example, right? I remember myself, I'll admit it, that when I first read Prabhupada's books and it said no meat eating, I was thinking, oh, how will I be able to give up Buffalo Joe's? It was just a certain type of, don't investigate it, please. It's a certain type of chicken shack type of thing. Horrible place. I was thinking, how will I be able to give up? There's such nice places there. I was thinking like that. I gave up meat eating immediately, but I was thinking, how will I be able to maintain my sadhana of not eating Buffalo Joe's like that? And then after some time of practicing Krishna consciousness, then the smell, even the vision of the place became abominable. Didn't want to have anything to do with that. Oh, such horrible smell is coming. Before I was like, wow, this is greater than the Nandana gardens in the Swargaloka, you know, appreciating. And then by Krishna conscious practice, a change of subtle body is happening. And then the same thing which one was finding so much pleasure, you think is abominable. Right? So this is a evidence that the body is actually changed. One may not be able to appreciate it, but the change is happening first in the subtle body and then it affects the gross body. So the things that the senses were normally attracted to, they lose their attraction to that on account of a change of body, a change of subtle body. So Prabhupada makes this other point that by chanting Hari Nam, which actually under the shelter of devotee, under the shelter of initiation particularly, yata kanchanatam yati kamsyam rasavidanataha, tata diksha vidanena dvijatvam jayate nirnam. When one takes shelter of a pure devotee and gets initiated by him. Initiation means the divya gyanam tato dadyat, the communication of divya gyan, transcendental knowledge, and the abrogation of sinful activity. This is called initiation. When the transcendental knowledge is communicated, and then Prabhupada says here, when he's initiated by a pure devotee, that means when the transcendental knowledge is communicated to him, the transcendental knowledge which is coming down through parampara is communicated to him. Shouldn't I sit like that? And he's initiated into the chanting of the holy name, his body changes as he follows the instructions of the spiritual master. You shouldn't sit like that either. So at first the communication of transcendental knowledge is given, and then he follows the instructions of the spiritual. That means he has to follow that transcendental knowledge. Then to that degree, his subtle body changes. And as his subtle body changes, it is understood that he's actually undergoing a change of body. So then the critic that says that you have to wait till you change your body, we are following that too. Just by chanting Hari Nam, the actual body is actually transforming. And the spiritual body is becoming manifest. And therefore one is immediately free from bondage. That is the message here. So there's a nice verse in the Bhagavatam. Martyo yada chakto samasta karma nivedi tatma vichitirshito me tadap mitat tvam pratipadya mahano Mayatma Bhuyaya Chakalpate Vai. This verse, Krishna is speaking to Uddhava and Uddhava Gita. He says, by taking shelter, those who are subject to birth and death in the material world, then if they takto samasta karma, they give up all their fruitive activities, and nivedita atma, they completely dedicate themselves to following the order of the Supreme Lord. Vichikirshi tome, desiring to please the Lord, not just giving up the activities and dedicating themselves to Krishna consciousness for some other purpose, but desiring to do something special for the Lord, desiring to please Him, then tadamitatvam pratipadyamano, then he will receive, he will become amrita, means he will achieve deathlessness. He will achieve immortality. How? Maya atma bhuyaya chakalpate vai. He will receive a transcendental body like me. Krishna says this thing. And this actually verse is quoted after dikshakale bhaktakare atma samarpan. At the time of initiation, one gives his complete atma to the guru. Se kale Krishna tare kare atma sam, and Krishna considers that person to be as good as himself. So to the degree we give up material conceptions and the spiritual consciousness is awakened and we pursue that consciousness, we nourish that consciousness, to that degree the body actually is changing. So one chants Harinam, giving up material conceptions by hearing transcendental knowledge from the spiritual master, and nourishing the spiritual consciousness by the appropriate method as given by the spiritual master, then one goes through a change of body. And therefore he becomes immediately free. Sajahati bhadam, immediately freed from bondage. So these are two messages, broad messages Srila Prabhupada is giving. Anyone wants to ask anything? Any questions? Okay, I saw your hand first. Yeah. If you deviate from the instructions, are you subject to your old subtle body, gross body like that? The answer is yes. It means that the instruction is the internal potency of the Lord. So when one follows that, he's under the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So then if he steps outside that shelter, then the material nature will immediately take over. So it is sometimes seen when devotees leave the Krishna conscious movement, they take to the same activities they were doing when they joined the movement. Right before they join the movement, same activities they would be doing right before they join the movement, if they leave. That is seen many times. Seen or heard through the ears. All right, I saw your hand. No, Atma means body, mind, soul. So to give the Atma means to give body, mind, soul. The idea to give the Atma is that you give all the activities you're doing to the services of Guru and Krishna, with the desire to please Guru and Krishna. See, there's two types of persons who give money to the government, let's say. Those who have to do it because of obligation, and those who may do it because of some type of loving relationship with the government members. Right, both will give money, right? Both will have to pay. But the one who is giving the money out of love is in a more confidential position versus those who are doing it out of obligation. They have no love, but they're a good abiding citizen, so they're giving. So when we say give the Atma, that means giving the activities to the services of Guru Krishna with a desire to please Guru and Krishna. Not just to get purified, but a desire to please them. You do what is pleasing to them. And Vichikirshi tome. That same, like quoted in the verse. They nirvedi tatma, they surrender. Vichikirshi tome, with a desire to do something special for Guru and Krishna. Whatever, even if it's a small thing, like give them a bagel or something. But something, desire to please them. So simple. This is called giving the Atma. So dedicating the activities. But behind the activities, there's a consciousness also. And sometimes we have the activities, but the consciousness is way off somewhere else. So giving the Atma, give the activities, body, mind, and give the consciousness also, the consciousness, you know, the desire to please, like that. Okay, that's good? Okay. Hare Krishna. I saw his name. So, yeah.
My question has to do with the last part of
not why. That's extraordinary. Anyone here has taste? Huh? Can I identify with that? What's the blockage? Anyone can say? Faith. Huh? Pride.
Not
following instruction. I'm just taking shelter with the Vaishnava. I'm just seeing what are some of the ideas that, you know. That's extraordinary. We don't have taste. And here Mahaprabhu was praying that I don't have taste. And you're saying I'm not able to identify with that. That's extraordinary.
Huh? Also,
mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. I'm not able to appreciate the glories because those are transcendental. But the fact that I don't have taste seems something very close to home because I don't have taste.
Frivolousness.
I like that answer. That makes sense to me.
Not understanding the urgency.
Not understanding the urgency, lack of seriousness. That makes sense. I mean, we're taking the consensus of the assembled Vaishnavas. So then the other aspect of the question is, you already gave an answer. Only one per person. So then the other aspect of it is that, well, the subtle body is changing. So, of course, there's two things. It's chanting Harinam under the shelter of spiritual master, Prabhupada mentions at that point. And to the degree we're following the instructions, to that degree, the subtle body is actually changing. And the other point is that the subtle body is changing to some degree. Otherwise, how are we following? You can't do anything in Krishna consciousness without a change of subtle body, change of heart. We can say change of heart, or you can say change of mind, right? Because the mind's tendency is inertia. It goes on moving in the same directions it used to for lifetimes. And now the mind has changed and... Are you here? Okay. You know, mind has changed and moving in another direction. So that means that there has been some change of subtle body. But the change is not complete. So therefore, one still finds attraction to this thing and attraction to that thing. And then, on account of attraction to this thing and attraction to that thing, there's the transparent bottle, so the honeybee can't taste the honey, right? The bottle means the material conceptions. The desire for, intense desire for material enjoyment acts like a transparent bottle. And all the honey's inside, the nectar's inside, but you can't taste it on account of the material conceptions. So then one continues to execute the process, step-by-step development, and until the transformation is complete. And getting it fully assimilated will take some time. And, I mean, according to the individuals, it takes some time. But we have many nice answers: pride, frivolousness, lack of seriousness. These are very good. Food for thought. Maybe you can play around with that. Does that help? Yeah. Oh.
He says, and he's asking for the right to
the house. He's asking for the.
He can't hear
the question. Oh, okay. Does one follow the other? Do they? It's like a circular argument, right? So what is this?
Hare Krishna.
Oh, okay. Of course, yeah, so follow the four regs, you need to be a devotee. And it's not that necessarily you need to be a devotee to follow the four regs, but to follow the four regs, you need to be a devotee. And one becomes a devotee by associating with a devotee. In other words, one, the energy that empowers one in devotional service comes through a conduit. You know this word conduit? Conduit means like a something that helps to transmit electricity. So electricity is all throughout the ether, but we have no access to it right now. You need a proper conduit to actually access the electricity that's all throughout the atmosphere. So similarly, spiritual potency is available abundantly everywhere. It's all pervasive. Mayam idam tatam sarvam. What is that? From avyakta. Avyakta murtina. Krishna's, the energy is all pervasive. But you need the proper conduit to access it. So then devotee is considered, is the conduit. You can look at 1.13.10, Prabhupada speaks about this. He uses this language even. Devotee works as a conduit for transmission of the energy. So if one wants to be empowered to do so many things, then he should come in contact with the conduit, the sat parampara, that is the conduit for such spiritual energy. And then in contact with that energy, he becomes empowered to do things like follow the four regular principles, chant nicely, and so on. Of course, coming in contact doesn't mean proximity alone, although proximity has a lot to do with it also. Just being in proximity of Mahaprabhu, many people will become pure devotees. And not only Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu's devotees, just by seeing them, they will become ecstatic. So proximity has some merit, but not the full merit. You know, if you're in proximity but you're committing offenses, that's not going to be very beneficial. So ultimately, we have to, we should seek guidance for our specific situation. And then if we follow the guidance, then that's the empowerment. And you can do extraordinary things like that. Simple point. Okay, anything else anyone wants to say? Yeah, you can say that. That is fine. 11th canto, 11th chapter, verse number 32. It's actually a series of verses from verses 29 to 32, I believe. And it's Krishna giving a long list of qualities. That's the verse. Kripalu, long list of qualities. And then at the end of it, he talks about Satama, the best of all saintly persons. So who is the best of all saintly persons? He knows that by following the regulations of Varnashram Dharma, he can be elevated. And by neglecting to do so, he can become degraded. But not caring for any of that, he just takes shelter of Krishna. And such a person is understood to be the best of all saintly persons. So in the commentary that comes there, it's described that this best of all persons, Satama, the word uses Satama, the best of all persons, is on account of his faith. He has so much faith in Krishna that he's not depending on any material. That doesn't mean necessarily rejects or doesn't follow, but he's not dependent upon anything in the material world on account of his faith. So on account of his faith, he's called as the best of all saintly persons. So it can be said like that, that to the degree our faith qualifies us for greatness in Krishna consciousness. That is okay. That could be said. Okay. Anything else? Yeah. Yeah, well, see, if you have faith, faith governs your lifestyle automatically. Krishna's chapter 17, Bhagavad Gita, right? He first speaks about faith, and then he talks about what types of foods they're going to be eating. That's the first thing he talks about, is the types of foods they're going to be eating. So that, in other words, a person's faith can be indicated by how he's eating, right? The type of charity he's going to be giving, the type of penance he's going to be performing. So Krishna speaks about those things in the Divisions of Faith chapter. So that means faith automatically governs our activities, right? So you have a devotee or a religious person, they profess great profound faith in God, But they can't practice a religious program or great faith in God, but really emphasizing material sense gratification to their near and dear ones. Go to university, get big education, get big house. Okay, do a little Christian conscience too. Don't get too much into that though. You know, the practical life. You got to be practical. You know, this type of language is often used. They've told like this. So although there is, and then coming to the mosque or the temple or the church and, you know, appearing very devotional, but in their heart of hearts, strong desire for material enjoyment. Therefore, Mahaprabhu called Raghunath Das, at the time Raghunath Das, before he was Goswami, his father and uncle, like worms in stool. He called them like that. Even though they were providing for the whole Vaishnava Brahmin community, they were very rich. They were adorning the dress of Vaishnava also. But Maharu said they are Vaishnava Praya. They're like worms in stool. Why? Because although they adopting externals of spiritual life, there is strong desire for enjoying material life in their hearts. They're just like worm in stool. It's like a worm in stool. Maharu compared this world to a place where people pass stool. And those who are trying to enjoy it, they're like worms in stool. So he said, your uncle and father are like a worm in stool. Maharu was saying a little bit playfully, but he meant it. They're Vaishnava, probably like worm in stool. They adopt a dress of religion, but in their heart, strong desire for material enjoyment. So that why? That's on account of faith. So you cannot just say faith is just the... Or you may say faith is what one values, right? And what one values will be practically manifest in their activities. You may say, I value this. You know, I value the Christmas retreat. But when it comes in contact with, you know, some program over here that has nothing to do with Christian consciousness, I choose that program over the Christmas retreat. Right? That means that's what I actually value. That's where my faith is actually in materialism. And that's okay. We're at where we're at. You know, that should not be a demerit as such. But it can help us introspect, like, okay, my faith isn't that deep. I actually really have faith in matter and hardly any faith in spirit. So what am I supposed to do to deepen my faith? But the fact of the matter is that if I can choose something that's materialistic over something in Christian consciousness, that's Christian conscious, then my faith is over there. Because that's what I value. And how do I know that that's what's value? Because that's what I practically pursue. That's what I practice. So faith deals with what are you valuing like that? That's an aspect of it, for example. Anyway, so it could be a broader discussion at some points. It's 8:30 now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.